Ladies and gentlemen, yes, you know exactly what time it is. What is going on, peeps? How are you today? Today is December 2nd. It's freaking December already. Can you guys believe it? I can't. I sound out of breath, and give me 2 seconds. A couple deep breaths. I just ran up the stairs in excitement for this episode. Why I'm so excited for this episode, I really can't tell you why. I have been doing absolutely dog water on my picks over the last 4 or 5 weeks. Don't know why I'm even excited, but I have a couple of announcements and a couple things to say to you guys before we even get into the awful picks that probably aren't going to be doing well this week, as per usual. Take a nice little sip. Ethan, I apologize for this week's episode. I am not drinking coffee at 1:30 before I go to work. When I drink an iced black cold brew before I go to work, it gives me the jitters, and nothing is worse than sitting on Long Island Expressway traffic for an hour when you have the jitters. So first thing I want to say is this is not the first time that you will be hearing from me this week in the podcast realm. I have a tremendous announcement that my next episode, which will be coming out tomorrow at some point, I will be talking about the travesties that are going on in Major League Baseball when it comes to the lockout, the disagreements between the owners, the players, the MLBPA, all the free agent signings, my disappointments with the New York Yankees. I will be talking about all of it tomorrow at some point. So look out for that episode. Either I have a couple doctor's appointments tomorrow. Things are still in motion with my new job that I am going to be starting probably at the beginning of 2022. So I still have to get a couple things cleared medical wise. So I have 2 appointments back to back at 8:30 and 11:40. So I probably won't be recording until mid to late afternoon. So look out for that episode either tomorrow night or Saturday morning. Just everything that's been going on in the MLB has been crazy. You'll get my full synopsis of what's happening, full everything, you know, when it comes to Rob Manfred, the lockout situation, all the player signings, everything like that, everything that is all well and good with the MLB offseason up until this point. Also, that episode will be sponsored. Yes, I know that. Sorry, drinking a lot of water so far to start this. I'm still kind of winded. It really tells you how much in shape I am cardiovascular wise. Wow, couldn't get that sentence out. But also, it will be sponsored, and I know that every single episode basically has been sponsored by Anchor. They have been nothing but supportive and helpful throughout the entire podcasting process. They give you an opportunity to, you know, grow, to manifest your own growth, your own distribution, everything like that. They give you all the tools necessary, completely free. All you have to do is just have a 30-second ad at the beginning of each podcast. They give you money for it. I mean, it's not much, but it's something. It's more than other people would probably give you for a free, you know, podcast platform. So they've been tremendous to me, but this is a great opportunity, and I will be talking more about it. A lot of people who are listening to the show already know who the sponsor is, but I'm not going to say it before I actually put the ad into the episode. So probably look out for a mid-roll ad at some point in that episode for Manscaped. Oh, no, I just said it. Okay, well, there we go. I wasn't paying attention to what I was saying. I was looking at my phone, getting the NFL pick'ems ready. So yes, the next episode will be sponsored by Manscaped. I know, I don't know how I got it. It must have been an accident. Their talent acquisition must have emailed the wrong guy. And they came to me and they said, do you want to do a 1 month partnership with Manscaped? And obviously jumped at the opportunity. Yes, yes, and yes. So, okay. Wow. What an absolute lapse of concentration that was. But yes, tomorrow's episode on Friday, December 3rd, will be sponsored by Manscaped. So I'll give you the whole lowdown tomorrow. Also, what I wanted to say before we get into this is thank you guys so much. Business is booming. AB style. And what I mean by business is booming is I'm not talking really about the picks because, you know, the picks have been pretty awful the last month or so. But I'm talking about businesses booming on YouTube. I finally started that 7-round mock draft series for every single team that I was talking about previously. And I gotta say, so obviously the first team I was going to start with was the New York Jets. They are my favorite team. I know them better than any team in the NFL. I know exactly what their needs are, all that kind of good stuff. I know the prospects that I'm looking for, and it took off. It is one of my most successful videos of all time. And it's all thanks to you guys with your continued support. And if you haven't gone to YouTube and checked it out yet, well, not only do I have the New York Jets 7-round mock draft for you, I have the Detroit Lions, and then I also have the New York Giants, what I just put out at 2 a.m. this morning. I had some technical difficulties, so it uploaded kind of late. But yes, the 7-round mock for the Jets that went up 10 days ago, the Detroit Lions mock that went up 3 days ago, and then the New York Giants mock that went up this morning. So check those out if you haven't. I mean, it's never too early to familiarize yourself with the prospects, especially if those are one of your favorite teams. I don't know. I know probably by, I'm going to say by Monday, there'll probably be another one out. I'll let these last two marinate for the next couple days and I'll work on another one. But I'm kind of torn between the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Houston Texans. I want to get all the bad teams out of the way first because that makes the most sense. Already those fan bases are looking towards the 2022 draft. So it wouldn't make sense to do like the Arizona Cardinals or the Green Bay Packers because those teams have, you know, championship aspirations, whereas the New York Jets, the Houston Texans, you know, Detroit Lions, Giants, Jaguars, etc., don't have those aspirations this season. So, like I said, never too early to familiarize yourself. You guys have been killing it with the support. The subscribers has gone up about 50 over the last couple weeks, and I'm not even exaggerating. Currently sitting at 766. Thank you guys so much. I mean, realistically, if we're real talk right now, I'm not going to get to 1,000 before the end of the year. But, you know, you never know. Who knows? One of these could really, really take off. But it's not looking like we'll get to 1,000. That was the year-end goal for subscribers. But the fact that we started 2021 with 195 subscribers, and at this point in time, we were sitting at 766. In my eyes, that is some substantial growth. I know that, obviously, having 766 subscribers probably puts me in, like, 50 million in ranking for, you know, YouTube channels. But it means the world to me, and it is just... it's terrific. And the fact that people even sample my content the way that they do, I mean, I am getting comments up the wazoo of people I don't even know. I mean, obviously I have comments from my friends who show tremendous support, but there are so many people that I have no idea who they are. They're new to the channel. They engage with the videos, and that's all I could ask for. I mean, I'll give you guys a little behind the scenes. The New York Jets mock draft video has 64 likes to 1 dislike, and I really want to know who that one person is, because that's not nice. But that is my biggest ratio of like to dislike I've ever had. I mean, there are a lot of videos, like, not to brag, but there is one video where I have 41 likes and 0 dislikes. My channel, I average 98.6% likes to dislikes. So, you know, only, what is that, 1.4% of people that watch my content dislike it. So I even appreciate those people for their feedback, because, you know, that might mean that I'm doing something wrong, that I need to change something. So, you know, but just 64 likes to 1 dislike is an amazing ratio. I can't thank you guys enough. That just really makes me feel like I pushed all the right buttons and I did everything correctly. But there's also that 1 dislike that makes me want to revise it and say, okay, what did I do wrong and what could I do better for the next one? So that's my little tangent before we start this episode. I guess you can call that a soft open. I don't really know if that's soft. I apologize if my voice also sounds weird. I've been like fighting these different bugs the last couple weeks. I just haven't been feeling that great. My nephews also, who come over basically once a week on Sundays, haven't been feeling that great the last couple of weeks either. So when I spend time with them, I'm assuming I'm picking up whatever they have, but I don't care. I wouldn't trade that time for anything in the world. But so if I drink a lot of water and I sound a little weird, I apologize. My voice and throat are a little scratchy today, but let's get down to business. You already know what we are here for. We are here for week 13, I want to say. Let's open up the trusty old ESPN app Let us see what is going on here. Yes, week 13, right? Yes, obviously week 13. So week 13, we're going to kick off with Thursday night football tonight. Now, if you told me at the beginning of the year that the Dallas Cowboys and the New Orleans Saints were playing Thursday night football, week 13, must-see television for me, honestly. Like, that is great. Like, I would love to see that. But now, you know, with what we know of the season, and we know that the Saints are absolutely decimated by injuries, especially on the offensive side. Alvin Kamara has already been ruled out. Teron Armstead has been ruled out. Ryan Ramczyk has been ruled out. So essentially the three most important pieces of their offense, their bookend tackles and their star running back, are out. We saw what the offense looked like on Thanksgiving when they had no running back and no tackles. They scored 6 points against a pretty good Buffalo Bills defense. The Dallas Cowboys defense has been playing a hell of a lot better than they have the past decade. So I don't expect this to be too close of a game. I'm obviously going to go with the Dallas Cowboys on this one. Whether they're in the Superdome or they're at AT&T Stadium doesn't really matter to me. I just think that Dallas has too much firepower on offense and defense to overmatch the Saints. The Saints, just even if they get a couple stops defensively, because the Saints still have a very good defense, I don't think that their offense will have any power behind it to the point where they'll be able to score more than maybe 13 to 20 points. And I think that the Cowboys, regardless of how well you play against them defensively, they'll always be hovering within that 4 to 5 touchdown range. So I'm going to go with the Dallas Cowboys for Thursday night football. Moving down to the first game on Sunday, it is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers against the Atlanta Falcons. Now, another game that at the beginning of the year, if you told me that, you know, I would say easily the Tampa Bay Buccaneers beat the Atlanta Falcons. And I'm not going against the Bucs. I am going to be picking the Bucs, but I will tell you that in the last 3 weeks, the Bucs have not looked that great. Even though they did score 38 points against the Indianapolis Colts last week, and they scored basically a walk-off touchdown with Leonard Fournette. 20 seconds left. He ran from 28 yards out, and he scored the touchdown to give them the win. That is a big win against a perennial playoff team in the Indianapolis Colts, but they lost to the Washington football team. You know, they lost to the New Orleans Saints. I don't know if that was 2 weeks ago. No, I don't know. I think that was 3 weeks ago. I could be wrong. But needless to say, Tom Brady has not been playing the best football of his career like he was at the start of the season. He's kind of fallen off just a little bit. But he did play pretty well against, I'm sorry, that was a month ago that they lost to the New Orleans Saints, because now I'm thinking to myself, they beat the Giants on Monday Night Football. So yeah, 2-2 in their last four games, and they lost to the Saints, who aren't that great, and they also lost to the Washington football team, who is surging, but is still not that great, not as good as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So the 5-6 Atlanta Falcons, they have had a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde season. There have been times where they look absolutely amazing, and then there are times where they look absolutely dreadful, like they did a couple weeks ago against the New England Patriots. They got blanked at home by the Patriots, and then they walk away with a 7-point victory against the Jacksonville Jaguars. So they have scraped together a few close wins that maybe shouldn't have been that close. All in all, I do believe that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers will win. I think it will be closer than anticipated because of how rusty the Tampa Bay Buccaneers offense has looked, and Tom Brady has looked like he has to work a couple kinks out of his game. But all in all, I don't think that the Atlanta Falcons offensively have enough to compete with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Cordell Patterson being an absolute revelation this year is basically their entire offense. They really have no one else. Russell Gage has played well, but Calvin Ridley is, you know, on the, I don't know what list he's on. He's on the like commissioner exempt list or something. That's definitely not true, but he's not playing right now due to his mental health issues. And then Kyle Pitts has basically disappeared for the last 3 weeks, and he is not, don't get me wrong, he's still probably a top 10 tight end in football right this second, but he has not lived up to expectations so far this year. There have been games where he's looked like an absolute world beater, and then he disappears for 4 to 5 games at a time. So he needs to get a little bit more consistent, I will say. But I just don't think that they have the firepower needed to compete with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Moving down to the next game, it is the, you know, I don't want to sound like this guy because the Arizona Cardinals have been playing higher, way better than my expectations that I had for them at the beginning of the year. But doesn't it feel a little weird that every time I look at the Arizona Cardinals, I feel like they're playing a bad team? Like, they're playing the Chicago Bears this week, the 9-2 Arizona Cardinals against the 4-7 Bears. Hopefully Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins are back, but let's give a quick shout out to Colt McCoy, who is 2-1 in his 3 weeks as a starter, and he's looked absolutely awesome in those 3 weeks. Good for him. He threw for, 340 yards and three touchdowns against the Seattle Seahawks a couple weeks ago. They've looked tremendous with him at the helm. So I am going to go either way. I know DeAndre Hopkins for sure is playing because he practiced all week. I don't know the status on Kyler Murray, but regardless if it's Colt McCoy or Kyler Murray, I don't see the Chicago Bears winning. The Chicago Bears offensively looked pretty good. That they're starting to unlock Darnell Mooney more and more every single week, and he has looked like a game changer for the Chicago Bears, so something to look forward to in the future. But that's really it. Allen Robinson has been nothing short of an absolute disappointment this year, so it's really just Darnell Mooney and the emergence of Cole Kmet the last couple weeks that have led this offense. But yeah, the same thing with the Bucs. I mean, the Cardinals just have too much firepower, and their defense is sneakily one of the best units in football. So I don't see a hard path to victory for the Arizona Cardinals in this game. Moving down to the next 1 o'clock game, this might be the game of the week, honestly. You have the 6-5 Los Angeles Chargers against the 7-4 Cincinnati Bengals. And I gotta roll with my Bengals on this one. And the reason why is I actually tweeted it the other day. So let me pull it up for you guys. I tweeted it yesterday, and it is pretty much the most engaged tweet I've ever had. And it makes no sense. Like, I don't understand why. But all I said was, can we talk about how good Joe Mixon has been this season? One, third in the NFL in rushing. Two, 11 rushing touchdowns, which is good for third in the league. Three, 13 total touchdowns. Four, a touchdown in 8 straight games. Five, multiple touchdowns in 4 straight games. And six, already a career high in touchdowns. And it got 58 retweets and 95 likes, which I don't really get too much engagement on Twitter, but that's pretty solid for anyone, honestly. So I'm going to say, as long as Joe Mixon continues to play the best football of his career, really, the Bengals, that is their offensive catalyst. As much as we want to talk about Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Burrow and how good T. Higgins has been the last couple weeks, I feel like Joe Mixon gets no love, and he really is the driving force behind that offense. The offense runs through Joe Mixon, and he has been spectacular. I am going to say the Los Angeles Chargers actually give up, I believe it's the 5th most rushing yards in the league. So if you give the ball to Mixon 25 to 30 times, you should have a good chance of winning the game. I am going to roll with the Bengals on that because the Chargers have looked very spotty this year. I think they might be a little bit overrated, and I am at fault for basically overrating the absolute shit out of them the entire offseason. They had one of my highest grades of their offseason because their offseason moves were great. But they haven't lived up to expectations so far. They've kind of fallen off a little bit. They're sitting at 6-5. This is a must win for them. But I am going to say that the Cincinnati Bengals are too hot of a football team right now to lose, and especially because of Joe Mixon. Moving down to the 5-6 Minnesota Vikings and the 0-10-1 Detroit Lions. And you know what's funny? I read a stat that I don't really remember the stat entirely, but it was something along the lines of the Minnesota Vikings are like the only team in NFL history through 11 games to at one point in every single game lead by at least 7 points and still be under 500, which is kind of a confusing stat. So, like, to think about it, basically the Minnesota Vikings have held a lead of 7 or more points in every single game and are still under 500 through 11 weeks of the season, which has never been done before, which in its own right is kind of impressive in a way that you could be that bad at holding leads. But the Minnesota Vikings continue to confuse us, but the Detroit Lions have absolutely no vertical pass game whatsoever. Jared Goff, he played admirably on Thanksgiving, but everything was just a dump-off pass to, you know, Jamal Williams or Khalif Raymond or Amon-Ra St. Brown. Like, the ball didn't travel more than 7 yards for anything more than one pass, the 39-yard touchdown to Josh Reynolds. Everything else was about 5 to 7 yards in the air. The guy just looks like he's playing scared, and rightfully so. I mean, he's got no offensive line help whatsoever. But the guy just looks terrified to play the quarterback position. I don't see any path to victory for the Detroit Lions for the rest of the season unless they somehow play like the Jets or the Texans this year or something like that. I think the Vikings, as inconsistent as they've been, they will get the job done against a team that is as bad as the Detroit Lions. I expect Justin Jefferson to have an absolute day, who is a top three receiver in the NFL. You could fight me any day of the week on that. And also Adam Thielen, who is tied for the most receiving touchdowns very quietly in the NFL with 10 so far this year. That dude is a red zone monster for a wide receiver. For a guy that's like slender and not big at all, the guy is just like unstoppable inside the 20-yard line. He is a red zone nightmare for a wide receiver. Oh, boy. All right, moving down to the 4-7 New York Giants, who have been playing some of the worst football I've ever seen for a team that's won like two of their last three games, and against the surging Miami Dolphins, who have won four straight games after being 1-7. They are 5-7 right now, and a win against the New York Giants might put them in a little bit of, you know, like the playoff discussion, which is kind of crazy considering how bad they looked through the first eight games of the season. The big thing to me is the fact that Mike Glennon is going to be starting at quarterback for the New York Giants instead of Daniel Jones. And believe it or not, I think that the Giants have a better chance of winning with Daniel Jones at the helm than Mike Glennon. So I am going to go with the Miami Dolphins on this one. I just can't trust the Giants offense. And as much shit as I talked about the Miami Dolphins offense throughout the first 8 weeks of the season, they finally started using Jalen Waddle more and more, and now this offense looks very, very capable of scoring points. So I'm going to ride with the hot hand, and I'm going to ride with the quarterback wide receiver duo that has the most receiving yards over the last 3 weeks, and that's Jalen Waddle and Tua Tagovailoa. So I'm going to roll with the Miami Dolphins on that one. Moving down, it's a tricky one. I said last week that if the Jets lost, that would be the last time, regardless of matchup, that I would ever pick them. And it is the 5-7 Philadelphia Eagles against the 3-8 New York Jets. And I got to be honest with you, 90% of people are picking the Philadelphia Eagles, and I still don't see why. Even if Jalen Hurts plays this week, he is still very, very injured. I don't know if it would be smart for them to have him give it a go. But then again, now I'm thinking about it, I just thought they have Gardner Minshew as their backup, and Minshew destroyed the Jets the one time that he played them. I think he threw for like 350 yards and three touchdowns or something. But I don't know, man. Part of me really wants to pick the New York Jets because defensively, they have cleaned it up over the past couple weeks. They gave up 21 points to the Miami Dolphins. 24 points, excuse me, I think. Yes, 24 points to the Miami Dolphins and 14 points to the Houston Texans. Now, I know that, you know, it's the Houston Texans and it's the Miami Dolphins, but let's give credit where credit is due. This defense gave up 45 or more points in three of four games in like September and October. And they've come a long way. I know that they're not playing as high-powered offenses with good running backs, but you know, you got to give credit where credit's due. If you give up, what does that equate to? 19 points per game over your last two games, you should be able to win a couple football games. And their offense kind of looked okay. They've been, you know, Michael Carter being out is a problem for them. Corey Davis was out as well, but they're getting back Corey Davis this week. You know, the more I keep talking about the Jets, the more I keep talking myself out of picking the Jets. So this will be one of my picks that I might change on Instagram on Sunday as my final pick. I am going to roll with the Philadelphia Eagles on this purely just because I feel like either way, if Jalen Hurts plays, he's too athletic to be stopped by the New York Jets defense. And then if Gardner Minshew plays, you already know backup quarterbacks against the Jets is a match made in heaven. The backup quarterbacks, remember a couple years ago when Matt Barkley had to play quarterback against the Jets when he was playing on Buffalo and he threw for like 300 yards and four touchdowns? Yeah, I remember that too. So not the best track record. But moving down to the next game, it is the Indianapolis Colts and the Houston Texans. And the Indianapolis Colts have been playing absolutely fantastic football over their past 6 weeks. There is no reason for me to pick the Houston Texans here. The Indianapolis Colts are in the hunt for a playoff spot at 6-6, and they're Jonathan Taylor. They have hitched their wagon to Jonathan Taylor, and he has not let them down. No reason for me to even consider picking the Houston Texans. We are going with the Indianapolis Colts on this one. And then, once again, here we go. These are the two teams that frustrate me kind of sort of the most. And we got the Washington football team that's surging, that has won three straight games, who is sitting at 5-6 and on the cusp of a playoff spot, against the 6-5 Las Vegas Raiders, who looked like absolute dog water before they pulled off a really nice victory over the Dallas Cowboys on Thanksgiving away from home. So I don't really know what to make of this one, because both teams have like screwed me royally this year. Every time I pick Washington, they lose. Every time I pick against them, they win. I don't really know what to do. So we're going to play a little game I like to call Eeny, Meeny, Miny, Mo, and then we're literally going to make our pick based off of what happens. So let's go. Ready? Eeny, Meeny, Miny, Mo, catch a tiger by its toe. If it hollers, let him go. My mother says to pick the very best one, and you are not it. So you are not it is the Raiders, so which means I'm going with the Washington football team. So I am going to pick the Washington football team because Eeny, Meeny, Miny, Mo said to pick the Washington football team. Moving down. Oh, finally, the Los Angeles Rams, who have been sputtering since starting 7-1. They've lost three straight games, and ever since acquiring Von Miller and Odell Beckham Jr., they look terrible. Now, make no mistake about it, Matthew Stafford has thrown a pick six in three straight games, but he threw for over 300 yards and three touchdowns against the Green Bay Packers, and your defense should be able to stop the opposing quarterback at least once, and they did not even accomplish that against Aaron Rodgers. Few defenses do, I will say that, but they kind of got dealt a shitty hand last week. I said that it was a must-win game coming off of the bye, and I still stuck by that statement, and I still picked them because I thought Sean McVay would get his dogs ready to play against Aaron Rodgers, but it didn't really look like that was the case. But they get a nice cushy matchup this week against the Jacksonville Jaguars. So there you have it. I feel like everyone wants to talk about how bad Zach Wilson has been this year. And granted, yeah, he's thrown like four or five touchdown passes, and he has thrown 10 interceptions, but I mean, he hasn't looked as bad as Trevor Lawrence. I was going to say Trevor Wallace. Everyone knows the TikTok comedian Trevor Wallace. No, Trevor Lawrence has not looked good. But then again, I don't like, and I'm going to get in a little bit of a tangent here because I got myself into a tizzy. I don't like when fans and teams give up on a quarterback after not even a year. You put Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, and Justin Fields in four situations. Well, maybe not Trey Lance because he hasn't really played, and the San Francisco 49ers are pretty good. Okay, so you put Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, and Justin Fields in three situations where it's almost impossible for them to win straight away. And then when Trevor Lawrence is getting sacked out of his ass and he's throwing interceptions and he's getting killed every single week, you want to say, oh, he's not good at the pro level. There's an adjustment period. Same thing with Zach Wilson. Now, granted, Zach Wilson makes some stupid throws. I'll give you that. But I mean, there have been flashes of brilliance for both of them and Justin Fields as well. That game against the Pittsburgh Steelers, arguably the Chicago Bears should have won, and he played great. So there have been massive strides by all three guys, but if you look at their numbers overall, it tells a different story, and numbers don't mean everything. But Trevor Lawrence gets killed every time he gets dropped back, every time he drops back. Zach Wilson gets killed every time he drops back. And Justin Fields might be the worst out of all three of them. He literally runs for his life on every single time he drops back. So I don't think it's fair to judge three guys that have been dealt a shitty hand that are supposed to be the franchise saviors. Yes, I understand that if you're drafted that high, you're supposed to make everyone around you better. But when you have no one around you to make them better, that's a separate issue. Like, what? Let's look. Honestly, the Jets might have the best receiving core out of the three teams, and that's really saying something. When you got Corey Davis, the emergence of Elijah Moore, Keelan Cole, Jamison Crowder, I'll give you that, and they have Ryan Griffin, who makes some nice catches from the tight end position every once in a while. So he's got some weapons to throw to, but Corey Davis is not a wide receiver number one. He's not playing like a wide receiver number one. He's more suited to be a wide receiver two. That's why the Jets had to go out and get a wide receiver one to complement Corey Davis and Elijah Moore. They didn't do that. So now you have like 1,000 picks in this upcoming draft. Let's make it happen. Same thing with Jacksonville. You draft Trevor Lawrence number one overall. What is your objective when he's getting sacked 90 times a game to do in the NFL draft when you have a high pick? You have to protect his blind side. You have to put pieces around these guys to succeed. Yes, I understand that Aaron Rodgers over the past couple years before this year basically had all that success with just Devontae Adams. But none of these guys are Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers, in my opinion, is the most talented quarterback to ever grace a football field. Or at least the NFL football field. Not everyone is going to be like him, even if he's and he was drafted like 30th overall or 24th overall, whatever it was. You're not going to get Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady or, you know, Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen every single time, but you can get a bang average NFL quarterback like Mac Jones, put the right pieces around him, put him in the right system, and he is going to succeed. The Patriots look like perennial Super Bowl contenders this year with Mac Jones as their quarterback. But you know what? They make him look fantastic because they put the right pieces around him and he fell into the perfect system. If you put Mac Jones on the Jacksonville Jaguars, the New York Jets, or the Chicago Bears, he has the same numbers that those three guys have. So I don't want to hear anything that, they got to give up on him. He's not the answer. Put pieces around him. If you put pieces around him and he sucks, then he's not the answer. Like if Mac Jones was starting from the beginning and he sucked ass this year, all right, he might not be it, or he might need 1 or 2 years of coaching before he becomes good. It's not a one-year thing, and that's what bothers me the most about these NFL fans, that they just, guy makes a bad throw, he sucks. Guy gets sacked, maybe he holds onto the ball a little bit too long, he sucks. Guy doesn't throw the ball away, maybe he throws it into double coverage, you know, tries to make a play, he sucks. He doesn't suck. There's a grace period, there's a learning curve, there's a lot that goes into it. And if we want to come back to this conversation maybe after next year or even 2 years from now, and those three guys still haven't put it together, okay, we could have a discussion then. But don't talk to me after Zach Wilson has played, 7 games in his career? Trevor Lawrence has played 11 games in his career. Justin Fields has played, 6 games in his career? Don't come at me with that bullshit. Come on now. I'm sorry, that was my little rant there. But I am going with the Los Angeles Rams after all that. I should honestly clip that because that was a really good rant. If you guys listen up until this point and you hear that rant, let me know what you guys think. Like, send me a text or something like that. What do you guys think about that rant? I thought that was pretty good. I'd flowed well. I was staring out the window the entire time. I had nothing going on in my head. I was just letting the words fly. I thought it was pretty good. Moving on to the next game. 4:25 rivalry game between the Baltimore Ravens and the Pittsburgh Steelers. And let's be honest here. Big Ben should have retired 2 years ago. Chase Claypool needs to stop talking shit after he's catching a ball down 41-3 off the fourth string cornerback from the Cincinnati Bengals. I don't know what it is with the Steelers drafting these guys that love TikTok more than football, but, and to each his own. I'm not trying to sound like a boomer here in any way, shape, or form, but like, come on, man. You're talking shit when you're down 38 points. Like, do you not care about your team that much that you'd rather... And like, it was a good catch, don't get me wrong, but like, the guy hasn't seen the field all year. if you went out, honestly, if you were down 38 points and you were going up against Jalen Ramsey or Byron Jones and you moss him from the back, maybe you can get up and talk a little shit. Maybe. But Darius Phillips, does anyone know who's listening to this right now who Darius Phillips is? Besides for me? And the only reason I know is because I researched him after I saw who Claypool made the catch on. Like, come on, man. Anyway, Big Ben has looked terrible. The Pittsburgh Steelers offense has looked terrible. Najee Harris has kind of slid into a little bit of a rookie slump. But that's also because the opposing defenses don't respect Ben Roethlisberger anymore. And they're just loading the box. And they're just stuffing him at the line of scrimmage. There's not really much he could do. The Baltimore Ravens, despite Lamar Jackson looking like a rookie quarterback on Sunday night, throwing 4 interceptions against the Cleveland Browns defense, they still pulled away with the victory. I fully expect Lamar Jackson to buckle down, turn it around, and come back with a great game on Sunday. I'm going to give the Baltimore Ravens the win. Moving down to the San Francisco 49ers sitting at 6-5 and in prime position to make the playoffs. We're going up against the 3-8 Seattle Seahawks. And Yeah, no, I am going to go with the San Francisco 49ers. The Seattle Seahawks have shown me nothing offensively. Their offense is broken, and maybe it's Russ's fault, maybe it's not. But, I mean, DK Metcalf had, what, two targets Sunday night? Monday night, excuse me. Tyler Lockett had 96 yards at halftime and then went ghost. Alex Collins is averaging like 2 yards per carry. And Russell Wilson, I think, was rushed back from his injury a little bit too quick. So what are we doing here? It's a mess. I honestly think that Russ's days in Seattle are numbered, and the only reason why is because I think that John Robinson and Pete Carroll are going to want to blow everything up after this because it's not working anymore. They just gave, what, $90 million or $70 million to a safety in Jamal Adams. You know, they have money all over the place. They just owe too much money to too many people, and the pieces are not in place to compete anymore, especially in the NFC West. So I'm going to go with the 49ers. They have been playing great football. Jimmy Garoppolo has been playing good quarterback. I know. Oh, I hate that sentence. I never thought I'd have to say that. My worst nightmare is coming true. But Jimmy Garoppolo has been playing well. Elijah Mitchell has rushed for 100 yards in 4 of his last 5 games. And the defense is playing great. And they also just got back Dre Greenlaw as well. I know that that Fred Warner is out for the next couple weeks, but getting Greenlaw back is a nice compensation for losing Fred Warner. So their defense is playing well. As well, Emmanuel Mosley is slowly but surely having an all-pro season that no one is talking about at the cornerback position. He has looked fantastic as well. So let's move on to the Sunday game between the 6-5, somehow 6-5, Denver Broncos taking on the 7-4 Kansas City Chiefs. And before the Chiefs' bye week, the Chiefs were playing really good football, not only offensively, but defensively as well. And that was really the key for me. The Kansas City Chiefs got off to a really, really slow start, and they weren't looking good on defense. Now they're kind of buckled down. They kind of got it back together. Their pass rush has looked really good over the past few weeks. So I'm going to go with the Kansas City Chiefs. I think that even though they're coming off of a bye week and maybe some of their momentum stopped, they keep on rolling. And I'm sorry, even though the Denver Broncos are 6-5, and they have a couple wins over a couple good opponents, like they beat the Chargers last week, and they beat the Cowboys a couple weeks ago. They blanked the Cowboys. Whoa. Voice cracked there. They didn't blank the Cowboys, but they almost blanked the Cowboys. They beat them. You know, I still just don't believe in them. I don't think that Teddy Bridgewater is the answer. I don't think Drew Locke is the answer either. I think that the Chiefs are slowly but surely coming back into being a well-oiled machine. And I don't think that the Denver Broncos are going to stop them. And moving on to the last game of the week. My voice is getting weaker and weaker as this goes on. So I don't know if you've noticed over the past couple picks. I'm just kind of breezing through them so I can give my voice a little bit of a break before tomorrow's episode. The 8-4 New England Patriots against the 7-4 Buffalo Bills. And I'm just going to come out and say this. The Buffalo Bills have beaten the New York Jets, the Jacksonville Jaguars, the Houston Texans, and the Washington football team. That's where 4 of their 7 wins have come from. Yes, they beat the Kansas City Chiefs, but the Chiefs were not right at that point. They have a couple of embarrassing losses as well. And the New England Patriots are the hottest team in football. And I went with them last week as well, and they won against the Titans. And the Titans are no easy team to beat. And I honestly think that Bill Belichick is back in his groove after taking a year off basically last year of not really, you know, having a good team around him. You know, I think this year he's got all the pieces in place to make a serious Super Bowl run. There, I said it. I think the New England Patriots have a serious chance to make a Super Bowl run. And I think the talk really starts on Monday, because I think that the New England Patriots are going to beat the Buffalo Bills. I really think they are. The Buffalo Bills offense has been sputtering over the past like month. It's been good. It's been bad. It's been bad. It's been good. The New England Patriots have been playing lights out football offensively and defensively for the past, what are they, 2-4? They've won 6 straight games. Hottest team in football, no reason to go up against them, even though that they're going against one of the better teams in football in the Buffalo Bills. So there you have it. There are my 14 picks. I fully expect to go like 7-7 or 6-8 because I have been very bad in picks last few weeks, but I appreciate you guys for listening. Thank you so much. It means the world. You guys are the best. I hope you guys, if you hear this now, you come back tomorrow on Friday, December 3rd, to hear my absolute tangent that I'm going to go on about the MLB Players Association, and Rob Manfred, and the Yankees.